Reading from Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, text number 9. Nachamam tani karmani nivadanti dananjaya udasina vadasinam ashaktante sukarmasu. O Dananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. One should not think in this connection that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no engagement. In his spiritual world, he is always engaged. In the Brahma Samhita 5.6, it is stated, Atma Ramasya Tasya Si Prakritya Samagamaha. He is always involved in his eternal, blissful spiritual activities, but he has nothing to do with these material activities. Material activities are being carried on by his different potencies. The Lord is always neutral in the material activities of the created world. This neutrality is mentioned here with the word udasinavat. Although he has control over every minute detail of material activities, he is sitting as if neutral. The example can be given of a high court judge sitting on his bench. By his order, so many things are happening. Someone is being hanged, someone is being put into jail, someone is awarded a huge amount of wealth, but still he's neutral. He has nothing to do with all that gain and loss. Similarly, the Lord is always neutral. Although he has his hand in every sphere of activity. In the Vedanta Sutra 2.1.34, it is stated, Vaisamya nair grinye na. He's not situated in the dualities of this material world. He's transcendental to these dualities. Nor is attached to the creation and annihilation of this material world. The living entities take their different forms in various species of life according to their past deeds, and the Lord doesn't interfere with them. Krishna is not responsible for the material world. Mayadhyakshena prakite suyate sacharachinam hetunaneva kunteya jagadvibharivartate. Yet it is said that everything in this world is going on under his direction, and also that he is the hetu, the cause of everything in this world. And still he's not responsible. So that's interesting, because normally, if we find out who is the cause of some trouble, then that person is responsible, isn't it? If we find the troublemaker, then we hold him responsible. As simple as that. But Krishna is the cause of everything. And nothing, not a blade of grass, moves without his will. And yet, he's not responsible. So that's interesting. because it wasn't Krishna's desire. It wasn't Krishna's desire. We, collectively, all together, desire this material world, all of us. Therefore, we are responsible for the material world, for the way it is. And it's just mirroring our consciousness. If we look at these different yugas and so on that are following each other, then they are simply acting as a mirror to our state of consciousness. In the Satya-yuga, those living beings who are very pure and exalted, all Paramahansa, one class of men, all transcendentalists, no one is interested in working. No one is studying for some degree. No one is preparing for a profession. No one is thinking about marriage. Everyone is just simply thinking about self-realization. And what will they eat? Suddenly the planet starts to provide. Grains just grow on their own without tilling the fields. Fruits are appearing on trees, edible ones. Everything becomes auspicious. Then some impious souls in that age will not attain the human form of life. Those the lower creatures, or maybe even some humans who somehow or other are not successful in going back to God in that life, they again enter into the cycle of birth and death, and they are again appearing in this world, and the times change, and eventually Treta Yuga begins, and in the Treta Yuga, man starts to have a material agenda. Now, of course, society becomes regulated. There are those who are in goodness, who want material happiness, but at the same time are looking for transcendence. There are those who are dedicated to piety, but very passionate, and also wanting to enjoy. Then there are those who are less pious and more inclined to enjoyment. And then there are those who are not pious at all and who are just inclined towards enjoyment. So the four varnas have come about and society becomes divided, and some of the pious souls go back to Godhead. And then again there are some who don't make it to the human species, they stay in the animal species, lower species, and they come, and some humans are not going back to Godhead. They take birth in Dwapara Yuga. Anyway, in Dwapara Yuga there are also some who don't pass the exam. And finally we have Kali Yuga, which is the age for those who have learner's difficulties. There's some special training school for those. And what to do, you know, in various ways, we're trying. And naturally, when everyone is hopeless at education, what do? You just lower the standards. You pass them at 30%. And things like this, right? What can you do? No? So this is Kali Yuga. The standard for human life has been lowered. Probably all of us, you know, would have not made it to the human species in any other yuga. No way. It would be it is a zoo here. We would have just been in the animal form of life, and somehow or other we would have gotten on. But now, look what happened. All these animalistic souls have now appeared in human bodies. It's a masquerade, it's a joke. It's just, they are not human at all. Dvipadabhasu, two-legged animals, they are behaving just like the animals. One zoologist, quite some years back now, wrote this book where he systematically showed how human beings behave exactly like apes. And he just gave all the points, what apes do, then what human beings do. And he showed it's the same. And therefore his book was called The Naked Ape. Then what can we say? Where is Dharma gone now? Gone. Where? Krishna swadamo bhagate dharma jnadi visaha kalo nasta drishami. When Krishna left this planet, dharma and jnana left with him. Where is dharma gone? Krishna took it with him. And what was left was a remembrance of dharma, some sort of vague principles, some sort of standards. But no one understood why. Why are we doing these things? For that, I have the black cat story, and for those who don't know the black cat story, I tell it really quick. There was a marriage, and everything was arranged, and the mother was doing it for her daughter. And just last minute, in the middle of it all, a black cat appears. A black cat! So that's not auspicious. So therefore, she, somehow or other, there was a basket, empty basket from some flowers. She took the basket, put it on top of the cat. somehow or other the cat was quiet throughout the whole ceremony. Everything went fine. 30 years later, it was her daughter's turn to arrange the marriage, now for her own daughter. And she had everything there, last minute checklist, tick, 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 yes, everything there, everything complete. Oh my God, we forgot the black cat. There must be a black cat. So they went looking, found a black cat, put it under a basket. And since that time, every marriage has a black cat. So like this, people in the name of piety were doing all kinds of things without understanding why, and it was parents forced it upon their children, and then when the children dared to question, but why, be quiet. Those questions are not to be asked. And then of course, because it was the age of Kali, the age of rebels, the age of independent souls, they all took advantage of that. And somehow or other, overthrew the establishment. And now, you can believe whatever you like. Homemade religion, if there is anything. Or atheism, or whatever it is. You know. And that's exactly how it should be. You know, that everyone has his own personal, this right to his own personal faith. Yes, yes. Everyone. This is beautiful. This is enlightened. Everyone has the right to believe what they want. My father told me when I was 6 years old. He said, son. Son. Everyone in this world has the right to believe what they want. Therefore, whether God exists or not, that's up to you. I was a bit bewildered. I kind of thought, I wasn't kind of sure what to do. And at the time, there was a cartoon on TV about a bird named Kali Miro. And Kali Miro was a small bird who had just come out of the egg, and he still had an eggshell on his head, like a helmet. You can Google him, Kali Miro. And Kali Miro would say, but I am small. You know? And he was always like, not knowing what to do, and the underdog. So I felt really, in this God question, like the underdog. But even when I grew up, I was still the underdog. Because whether child or adult, it doesn't make much difference. How can we ever figure it out with our own little brains? Who is the Supreme Lord? Whether there's a Supreme Lord? And all these things, you know. And Lord, it sounds so stuffy. Can't we think of something else, you know? Something more exciting, yes. A better word, yeah. Yes, in the Netherlands, the word God became something that created allergies. Lots of people have allergies these days, and in the Netherlands, lots of people have allergy for that word. Therefore, the G-O-D phenomena is something that should not be publicly spoken because people have allergies. So we are sunk in ignorance. We don't know anymore. We just don't know anymore what to do, what's right, what's wrong. And you know, it's like as we drove home from the bus party, the Christians were on the corner with the anti-abortion things, and then later that day, I saw that in another country, people were having a big demonstration for abortus. Yeah? So what do you do then? Yeah? But it gets so confusing. Arguments on both sides. You know, you don't want to kick that innocent child into an antisocial situation where it just has no chance. You know what I mean? And then just a little surgery can just solve like a lifetime of trouble. Yeah? And this is how we create criminals. So it's not only trouble for themselves, but trouble for society at large. Therefore, shouldn't we consider that possibly abortion is a noble act, an act of mercy? Have you ever thought about it like that? Like this, the ignorance can... Ignorance combined with intelligence can create all kinds of theories. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, the age of Kali is compared to an ocean. And it says, in this ocean there are all kinds of crocodiles. The crocodiles of all kinds of speculative theories. But by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, an innocent child can swim across this ocean which is filled with these crocodiles of dangerous speculative theories. Now, would you send a child to swim across an ocean? Go, swim. Come on, you can do it.
Come on, boy, go, swim, yeah.
Okay, Crocs, he's coming. This is abuse. Huh? This is too much. But still, by the mercy of, against the odds, it is possible. So now we are restoring. We are restoring transcendental knowledge. Somehow or other. Little by little. We begin to understand again what was forgotten over all those yugas. And that is quite amazing. So here we are with a mixture of both, you know, a bit of the Kali Yuga birth and a bit of the Kali Yuga qualities, and then in the middle all that mercy, which we then receive, and then suddenly there's all this knowledge and amazing Vaishnavas are described, the potency of the holy name of Krishna Prasad, transcendental service, what power it has, and everything has to change. It says day turns into night, the Bhagavad Gita says. For me, that was literally so, because I used to go to bed at 4 a.m. and when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I had to get up at 4 a.m. So that was kind of a major change, I must say. I was therefore in the beginning famous for falling asleep in Bhagavatam class while standing up. Because it was just too much of a jet lag to do. The change was too big. So this is the difficulty. The difficulty is that we have old habits, and that these old habits, they haunt us. They are following us. And although we know that they're foolish, still, they haunt us. I mean, I know someone who smoked, tried everything, couldn't stop it until he had a heart attack. And that was like the final, okay, now I'll stop. Yeah? But that took 60 years. You know? So that's a foolish thing. Something like smoking has no, what can I say, it has, what does it have to offer in terms of, what positive effect does it have? So many other things, just addictions. What positive, what benefit, so little. But yet, because we bring all of that with us, that's why everything is so difficult, so hard to chant, so hard to be a devotee, so hard to do everything. Impossible. And it's just a contamination. It is that. Once I was staying with His Holiness Bhakti Bhusan Swami from Germany in one room, and I asked him a question, you know. I asked him a question that about the way he joined. I had heard how he joined Krishna consciousness. And basically, in those days, there was one devotee who went to Germany, and he was 19 years old, and he had a few magazines with him. And he stood on the street with some cartels, played the cartels. He met this boy on the street who was interested, sold him a magazine. The boy went home, read the magazine, and joined the next day. What did he join?
A magazine and a boy on the street.
I mean, that's quite something, huh? So, finally I was alone with him in one room, right? So I asked him, I said, Maharaj, how could you do it? How could you join one boy with a magazine? How could you do it? It's like, see, I wasn't like that. I was like, well, what is this? You know, like, okay, well, looks strange. They say it's a tradition. Okay, let me check that out. Okay. They have books. Okay, what are these books? What's in the books? Right? Let me read them. And so, but I said, Maharaj, how could you join, you know, a boy with a magazine? He said, like, well, I was always like that. When I knew that something was right, then I would just accept it and just go for it. And I was thinking about it, I was thinking, he must be very pious. Very pious. Must have had so much piety that he immediately understood what was right, and immediately he had the faith to completely surrender to it. Now, if you're not so pious, then, you know, you go like, well, I don't know, what is this? Let me check it out first. Well, that is a strange point in the book. I'd like some clarification on this. I don't think I agree with this. And we find something. I mean, there's always the old saying, give a dog a bad name and hang it, you know. Give a book a bad name and hang it, right? Bhagavad Gita. So, got rid of that. If you find a little thing wrong with it, you can dismiss the whole book. You can dismiss the whole Hare Krishna movement. These guys are in illusion. Yeah. Yes, you know. We understand they come from dysfunctional families and they just need to feel that togetherness, and that's why they join a sect, you know, just like everyone accepted. Nice movement, and everybody loves everybody, and, you know. And then, if only that was true. But anyway, and then you just, you know, but you find one mistake in the book, and yeah, you can dismiss the whole thing. Fantastic. Wonderful. So, let's find a mistake. Then we don't have to change our lifestyle. Then we can just go on and say, well, it's difficult to determine what the goal of life is in this day and age. So, I'll just stick with what I know until I find something better. Yeah, that's one approach. But those who are more pious, they are like dry grass, a little spark immediately. And that was what I saw in Maharaj. And I also saw that, like, therefore, due to that piety, he has been granted that vision, that depth, that in one glance he can see what is right, what is wrong, what is true. Because piety is not just like, oh yeah, I have somewhere a little slate here and I've all my good deeds recorded for my last life and I'm carrying that with me, like some sort of passport. No, it gives us all the good qualities. It gives us the refinement. It gives us the proper intelligence, spiritual intelligence. In astrology, not that I want to sell astrology to you here, but in astrology, they make a distinction between two types of intelligence. One intelligence comes from, one type comes from Jupiter, the other type comes from Mercury. Now, if you have the kind of intelligence by which you can figure out how a computer and a program works and all these kind of things, Mercurian, that's Mercury, that kind of intelligence, or mathematics, or physics, or, you know, whatever, all those things, economics, that is kind of Mercurian. But if you have the kind of intelligence where you can understand the deeper meaning of life and where you find answers on questions, that's Jupiterian intelligence. That's due to piety. That's, okay, all good qualities are due to piety, but that is due to having had some spiritual association, some spiritual inclination in last life. So it makes a difference. So now, backtracking, you know, looking at us, that's why spiritual life is so difficult. That is why we're dragging our feet. That is why all these years and still not really plunged into it, because we are impious. Gee whiz, never thought of it that way. I always thought I was a saint. Blimey. Blimey, I always thought it was a saint. Well, you know, not quite, I'm sorry to say. Not quite. Yeah. That is the situation. So, just because one became a vegetarian doesn't make one a saint. We did one thing right, and immediately think, I'm so amazing, I'm so much more exalted than other people. Oh, how wonderful am I? But the truth of the matter is, we are not biased. We are inclined towards impiety. And that's where spiritual life is so hard. So hard. And if we were more biased, it would be so natural and so easy, and we would just be so much at home in spiritual practices that we wouldn't hesitate for a moment. We just, and we would write a Vyasa Puja offering once a year, and in that Vyasa Puja offering we would not say, my dear Guru Maharaj, you're so great, that's the first half, and the second half is, but I'm just very fallen and struggling, and I'm praying for your mercy, and that somehow or other I may have the strength to stay on the spiritual path and to keep on going. You're most fallen. So that was a Vyasa Puja offering. But then the pious, they write different Vyasa Puja offerings. I saw that in Indrajumna Maharaj, he wrote this nice offering where he just wrote, thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you for giving me such a nice service. It was all thank you. The whole thing was just positive. It was nothing like about me, but, you know, about his greatness, but all about thank you for giving me such a nice life. And the whole offering was about that. And again, I thought, pious, very pious. If only I could see it like that. But I'm ungrateful. I'm going like, oh, Of course, you are wonderful. Of course, the devotional service is wonderful. Boy, is it tough. please give me the mercy so that I may be able to somehow not fall by the wayside. Interesting. I remember how Tamal Krishna Maharaj left this world and how then for days there was so much discussion because he was Prabhupada's personal secretary and he was really like so instrumental in so many arrangements in ISKCON for the present, for the future, such a powerful visionary. So Maharaj was made as a key person in ISKCON. And so that was being remembered for days. And then Bibi Govindaswamy spoke and he said that he was speaking about Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and then he said, yes, Tamal Krishna Maharaj had a great admiration for Jayapataka Maharaj. He said that Jayapataka Maharaj is such a pious personality. He's such a pious personality. It's just amazing. And then later Jayapataka Maharaj was speaking, and he was just saying, I never knew that he thought like that. He's just thinking about a whole relationship that he had missed, you know, somehow or other. But Tamal Krishna Maharaj, with his sharp vision, saw it, you know, and it is true. I also never saw it in that way, but after I heard that, I was thinking about it, and then I saw, yes, he's so eager to do endless pious activity, always eager. We see this piety in the Vaishnavas. Another such Vaishnava is Gopal Krishna Maharaj. Just amazing. You know, the Gopal Krishna Maharaj is something else. Because if anybody works, he works hard, really hard. And of course, management. And management is intense, it's draining. And he sits in these meetings, endless meetings, and I sometimes also have been sitting in these meetings and I'm getting totally fried to a crisp, to tell you the truth. And after such a meeting, it's like in Mayapur, in GBC meetings, they, in the evening and in the breaks, they serve all kinds of tasty snacks and cookies and this and that, you know, because you need some compensation after all that kind. It's a grind, right? But then you have Gopal Krishna Maharaj, and then as soon as he gets out of the meeting, instead of like going totally crash, no, he goes for a holy dip somewhere, you know, to some remote place, and he drives out there, and he goes, takes a bath, and it's a Bahulastami, which is coming soon, and he goes to Radha Kund at night, and he goes, sure, and the next day he's there again. It's just very pious. You know, we say, I guess I go next year. And, you know, it's like, what to do? It's too busy. I'll go next year. That's impiety, you see. So I had a bit of Vrindavan for a few years. It came to, you know, couldn't get the money. But if you really would have wanted to go, you would have somehow or other done it. Somehow or other. You would have gotten it, you know. If you had the desire, you would do it. You would go. You know what I mean? It is like that. That's where we recognize these great qualities of great piety. Yeah, well, okay, now I've painted some piety all over the place, you know, piety, 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 you know, it's pie in the sky. Yeah? I mean, let's be frank, we don't have it. So what do? When you don't have it, I don't know, get depressed, you know, sink in the mud of your own misery, you know, go down in the swamp. Is there any hope for you, impious souls? A dim glimmer, very little, is it? Well, yes, it looks pretty dark. But there is just that mercy of Lord Chaitanya coming through the cyclic succession, coming through Prabhupada. That's all there is. All that's it. There's nothing else. No hope in all directions. Dead end street. Turn left. Dead end street. Go forward. Dead end street. Turn right. Dead end street. Turn back. Dead end street. This is a nightmare. But how can that be? I came from that way. Still, it's a dead end street. You can't go back to where you came from. I was behind a truck the other day, and on the back it had written, on the right side, it said, right side. And on the left side it said, suicide. That's a good truck. I like that. Anyway, all streets, dead end street. That's it. Where to go? Nowhere to go. Nothing to do. Nothing. Nothing's going to work. Nothing. Nothing. It's all going to fail. Everything. Forget it. It all dead end streets. The only thing that's going to work is by taking shelter of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Do you believe that? Some of you may not completely believe that. If you're not completely believing that, then you are impious. But by association with devotees, you can gradually develop more faith and rise above. And then see, and the shells will be taken off our eyes. And then we can actually, with strong faith, take shelter in the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shada Sabda Vishwas Sada. Sada Shabda Vishwas Kai Sudrida Nishchai Krishna Bhakti Koyo Sava Karma Kritahare. Shada Shabda Vishwas Kai. So for the word Shraddha, we say it is, we call it faith. The firm faith that from performing Krishna conscious activities, all good will come. Shraddha also can be broken down. The root of the word Shraddha is Srat. And Srat means that which is heard. That which is heard. And Da comes from Dara, to hold. Shraddha. So to hold that which is heard within the heart. That's what it means. Shraddha. And I mean, etymologically speaking, if we hold what we have heard in the heart, then gradually it can develop, and faith can develop. Like that. And that's the key. A Vaishnav, Shraddha Anusari, according to the Shraddha that he is following, he is classified as a Kanishtha Madhyam Uttam Adhikari. So this is the situation according to the level of faith that he has attained. So it is all about faith, actually. The key is faith. And well, faith, I always say that faith, it begins with anandamaya vyasat, that the living being is by nature pleasure-seeking. So wherever you think that that pleasure is to be found, that's where your faith goes. Money, money, is the honey, honey. Or, baby, baby, I love you, baby. Oh, yeah. So wherever that faith goes, it's rock and roll, or it's whatever it is, punk, or whatever it is, wherever our faith is, that happiness will be found. That's where it will go. And our faith is bahusakya, it is many-branched. A little happiness here, a little happiness there, and a little of my faith for happiness is here. It's a whole thing. My faith for happiness is all over the place. Bahusakya hinantascha, many-branched. And, you know, although the things I got so far are not perfect, still, you know, it's better than nothing, so I won't let them go. But I keep on looking. Yes, and in this way, they say the girl is walking on the hand of her boyfriend and looking at another one. And the boyfriend also. That's very common. You can see that if you go downtown. You can check it out. Surely they will watch. See? Still not satisfied. That's the point. Not that they're not faithful, they're just not satisfied. So that is the situation. So wrong faith. But the faith goes in so many things, and when we finally, when all the faith has to be brought back to Krishna consciousness and withdraw all that faith from everywhere else, take it back. Every little bit, everything. Not just like, I'm surrendering to Krishna, that's the front, but what about the back? Did you surrender the back as well? And the side, and everything else. So complete. So it's like it's a whole to bring back all that false faith. Therefore, we have to look at our material life and be convinced that it doesn't work. See, if you think, well, you know, okay, my last car was a lemon, but maybe if I get that brand, then my previous marriage didn't work, but this one might work. The seventh one, the lucky number. Like this. No. It will only work. And what if it works? So happy together in the material world. And then what? And happy together, we die. Yeah. And then the happiness is really over. So what's the benefit of that? Happy together. Unless we're Krishna conscious, unless Krishna is part of it. Happy, you know, I love my country, good for you. In Sydney there's a park opposite of the temple and there's this big war memorial and it says the greatest thing a man can do is give his life for his country. And I go, suckers. Sorry. It ain't me. I'm getting out of there, it was getting bad. I'm going to look for a more peaceful part of the world. Sure. Come back when it's over, you know. So, well, I made a connection in this lecture between piety and faith. And where there's no piety, that faith can come from those who have it. Where there is piety, the faith will also come from great personalities who have it. But we see that a person very quickly can take to Krishna consciousness. If we are not in that category, then at least we have to think about it, you know, and then we have to make a conscious effort to just pull our faith back from other things, you see. Then we have to consciously cut the other things. If we are somehow or other attached to so many material things, like, what's it going to bring? All these thoughts. Name one thing that is really good in the world. Just one. Maybe I'll go for it, who knows? That's not in this world. That's in the spiritual world.
The ocean
is heavy. Shark. All kinds of things in the ocean. How many people died in the ocean? I like the ocean. I like water. But I'm also scared of the ocean. Just if I'm on the shore, I'm not so scared. But when I'm on a ship, I used to have a sailing yacht, and we used to go sailing. And sometimes, you know, it was heavy weather, and then I was really, really scared. And if I would sail around the Cape, I would pray before, go around, and be very happy after, when I made it. So I don't know about the ocean. It's a love-hate thing.
It's a variety.
It's a variety, yeah, a variety of different forms of death. Nicely colored, blue, and waves. I'm from the North Sea, there it's not so beautiful. It's nasty and grey. And the Germans come and they say Nordsee, Mordsee, which means North Sea, Murder Sea. It is dangerous. My mother told me.
Certain individuals who can be successful and prosperous in their spiritual life while being in a more isolated kind of state of life. But for most, we need to have friendships where we inspire each other. Can you comment something on that idea?
The first friendship is with the spiritual master, and that's the deepest. Sudrita Suridam, firm friendship. Surit, there is Surit, and there is Bandhu. Surit means from the heart. Rit is heart, right? So Surit is friendship that really goes deep into the heart, which is based on trust, right? And on knowing that I can reveal my heart to this person and I will not be betrayed. And my unconditional well-wisher. Whereas then Bandhu, my Bandhu, yes. So many Bandhus. Hey, Bandhu. Bandhu the Bandar. Oh, my friend Bandar is monkey and Bandhu is friend. And so many Bandhus, so many friends. So that is also valuable. Friends that are our friends because they do the same things, similar things, that are like-minded, with whom we can share, who can understand, you know, who can appreciate when we, you know, when we said, that was a great kirtan, and they also thought it was a great kirtan, you know. You need to be able to share the things you have been doing with others, even if it's only over Facebook. So this sharing element is there in with the Bandhus. But with the Bandhus there may not be necessarily that complete trust. You wouldn't tell them everything. You know, you're great friends, you laugh together, you live together, you do so many things together, but you would never tell them everything. That is only with very few. And that must be there with the spiritual master, that kind of sweet relationship. And when that's there, at least with one person to that level, then that is enough. Then the other type of friendship of just like-minded people with whom you can share, who can, with their enthusiasm, enthuse you, who can, you know. See, it's like one thing is we are all into prasadam. Yeah? So that makes us naturally enthusiastic to talk about it, to eat, to come together. Other people, they also eat, but not like the Hare Krishna movement. It's not the same. They don't have the same gusto, you know. it's something. So only the devotee can understand, you know, when you start talking about prasadam. And so on, kirtan, and, you know, you go to a Bhagavatam lecture. How exciting! What are you going to do on Saturday night? I'm going to go to a Bhagavatam lecture. Really? Wow! Amazing! Is that what you do on Saturday night? Yeah. What's it about? About spiritual knowledge. How exciting. But for us, it is. So you need people who you can share. That's the point. But in a surit friendship, you may actually open your heart and actually tell them what you're going through. And that's very important that you have that at least with someone, maybe with a few. And so that you have some shelter. And if that relationship with the spiritual master is very strong, even if you don't have so much connection with somebody else, doesn't matter. It keeps you going.
Raj, connected to that, many of us only see our spiritual masters once or twice a year. So how do we make that connection strong?
Yeah, my spiritual master also said to me when he gave me sannyas, he said, sannyasis wave at each other from planes. So it was a fact. So I know what you're talking about. Well, I guess we have to make an effort, you know, to sort of, when the opportunity is there, to connect. And I feel that that's especially the duty as a disciple, yeah? To connect, yeah? To come forward and to actually try and each time reconnect with the spiritual master when he's around. And because it's a deep heart-to-heart exchange, it doesn't need to be so often. It's not that kind of exchange where, you know, and, you know, we drank hot milk and biscuits together, you know, kind of thing. But more. That trust, you know, stays intact. And even then, if you don't see someone for a long time, it's still there. And because you've all the time lived by that, you know, you lived by what you discussed. This is what I'm doing, this is where I'm at. You got understanding for it, you got blessings for it, and you're still living that. Then the relationship is alive. But if we're not living it, and if the understanding that was there, and then sort of, then we come before the spiritual master suddenly as a distance. Then we should have the courage to open our heart and say, like, you know, since last time, a few things have happened. And if you do, then that will restore the relationship. So it's not just automatic, we have to restore it with our honesty.
Raj, you're mentioning that mercy is all we have, like everywhere is a dead end. And you know, like what you've done is mercy is everywhere, it's like saturating the whole atmosphere. But perhaps because we're so attached to sense gratification, we're not taking advantage of that. So I'm thinking, how then to actually get the mercy if we're in that kind of unfortunate predicament and that kind of cycle that we're not taking advantage of?
Yeah, we're not just attached to sense gratification, we're also afraid. Krishna says, just surrender unto me. At the end he says, Masuchaha, do not fear. Because we have fear, we're afraid. So what to do? Well, the mercy is there, and whatever connection we get with it, we'll benefit from it. So we're making advancement, but maybe not as much as we could, because we're holding back. Held onto the tree and said, let me go. Yeah. He held onto the tree and said, let me go, let me go, let me go. So yeah, you know, and as long as we're like that, we're not gonna reach the more advanced stages of bhakti. Then anaitana vritti, it'll be very long. Stage. So we have to. Prabhupada said we have to be madhyamadhikaris. Madhyamadhikari, whether afraid or not, with full faith, go for Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, this boy, Ghanashyam, is very nice. Very nice. He works so hard. He sleeps only a few hours every night. see, and later he's worshipped as the Bhakti, as the great Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. But he was a great brahmachari. He was really like very, very serious. So it's every service is the preparation for the next. So it's what, whatever we do now will create the future. So it's in our hands. Up to our level, we can do what we can do now, and that will create the future. So we must think about that. Yes? Yes, Krishna consciousness comes in our lives in so many ways, and not everyone's life is happening in a temple. Right? In a temple, you see devotees from the moment you get up. Traffic jam in the bathroom, that's where it begins. Too many devotees sometimes. But at home, you know, when we are in a home situation, it's different. And but just from the books will also be a bit meager. Maybe we cannot get so much personal association because you have a life, but some attempt must be made to also be with devotees as much as possible, because it is powerful to be with devotees. But definitely, if you read the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, when you read the Nectar of Devotion, you're directly associating with Rupa Goswami. Okay, well, apply that to any other book and get a lot of association. Good association. Rupa Goswami, not bad too, for starters.
Maharaj, you mentioned about impiety.
Impiety.
Yes, and if we're not pious enough to make proper decision in our life, to withdraw our faith, which is something not available in our life.
Yeah.
So what is the scenario for us? Should we go through the school hard knocks to purify ourselves, or any other hopes for us?
Yeah, partially like that. As you say, it's like, you know, we were in the middle of an impious life, suddenly in the middle of, and we were suffering as a result of it, then in the middle of all that, the Hare Krishna movement walked in, and somehow or other, it touched something in us, and we, because of the mercy, and we took it, but only to an extent. And now we sort of have reached a saturation point, you know, where we're stuck in our spiritual life, and sort of not going further. And we've reached, it's the Peter principle. They say where you reach your point, your point of stagnation. So we've reached the point of stagnation. And here we are, just not really making much advancement, but we are around. And all of us are reaching that point. And now what to do? Now we have to we depend on mercy, but service can attract mercy. So the only way out is service, to attract more mercy. We need more mercy, then we must do more service. Somehow to get more mercy. And if we don't go for more mercy, then we remain in this stagnated situation. The Peter principle is in management known as the the point of incompetence. Everyone comes up and up and up and up until they reach a point of incompetence. And everyone naturally reaches that point of incompetence. In Krishna consciousness, you can say everyone naturally reaches his point of stagnation, where it's just the balance between the old habits and the desire to go forward sort of has reached a point where we're stuck. And that's where we stay for years. And then we make little advancements just automatically. And that's how spiritual life goes on for most. Only by a lot of service can we attract mercy.
To live a simple life, you know, in our daily activity, you know, just keep life a bit simple in this hectic world, and you know, just, you know, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Helpful. Because the more you make it complex, the more things you have on your mind.
Because you always want more and more.
Sure. If you have two houses, you have double problems. If in the second house you put another wife, well, there are men who have like one wife in PE and one wife in Cape Town, yeah? And they travel for work up and down. Yeah? Anyway, that's a lot. Better keep one house and one wife to begin with, and not too big, maybe not unnecessarily big. Yeah, but we can. Whatever simplicity we can have in this world will make us free. But if you, what are you going to do with the freedom? That's the next question. So simplicity is good, gives us freedom. What are we going to do with the freedom?
Do more things.
For what? Then you make it complicated.
It depends what you do it for. The right
okay,
things.
What you going to? What is the right thing then?
You know, spiritual and you know.
Mixture, spiritual and
half. For now.
Cocktail.
For now.
All right. Yeah, good. Yeah, good start. Half. That's a deal then, huh?
Half. Not a bad deal.
Not a bad deal, though. Okay. All right. We'll start like that. Half. I'll come and collect my half. No, that's good. I appreciate though, what you're saying. It's true that we begin to make life simple, and then with the time we gain, we can do something spiritual. And that way we get stronger spiritually, and we get blessings in so many ways, and suddenly our life gets so much better. That's a good idea. It's a simple living. Prabhupada said simple living, high thinking. Those two things. Simple living, high thinking. Phew.
Jai. 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 Jai.